Well, this morning is going to be somewhat of a history lesson, more so than just a message. To prepare for the ongoing messages. One of the reasons why I chose to preach through the book of Joshua was not only because Debbie wanted me to and suggested it, but also because I like to preach from the New Testament and then go to the Old Testament, so we get an overall view of what the Scriptures have to teach us. We're going to go through the book of Joshua, and again, I'm going to give you a little history lesson this morning. So I have to erase this, and hopefully you all can see this when I put this up. Because we're going to go through kind of like a time frame, and I think it's important to see, to understand and see that as we begin to journey through and delve into the book of Joshua. The book of Joshua is the first book in the Old Testament which is designated as history. There are what we call 12 books in the Old Testament that could be designated history. In the Hebrew, they're called the former prophets. But specifically, these books have to deal, and Joshua in particular deals with the history of the nation of Israel and its beginnings. Now, the Late Bronze Age, and I'll just put this, LBA, lasted from about what we can determine, what has been determined, from about 1550 to 1200 BC, the Late Bronze Age, before you even get into the Iron Age. And the nation of Israel and the Israelites fall within that. Okay? By the time we get to the beginning of the book of Joshua, and the entrance into the Promised Land, it is about 1407 BC, okay, before Christ. But 1407 BC, when they come to the edge of the Promised Land, it's 1407 BC. Now, that's important to see that because they're in what they call the Late Bronze Age, and by that time, there has been a lot of disintegration as far as nations are concerned. And the culture has been going down, has been disintegrating as such, by the time we get to this period. Now we know that the principal character of this book is Joshua. And the name of the book is taken from him. But as Brother James Smith states, what we need to look at and not argue about and wrestle with is who the author is. I believe Joshua, until you get to the end of Joshua, because Joshua can't record his own death. And it is recorded there. But the majority of the book of Joshua, I believe, is written by him. But that's really neither here nor there. What is important is the theme of the book of Joshua. As Brother Smith says, the theme of the book of Joshua is the victory of faith. And my brothers and sisters, we need that today for what we are experiencing. not only through this virus, but what has arisen because of it. And those who would like to destroy and tear down our country, but not only our country, the world as such. He says, the theme of the book of Joshua is the victory of faith. Joshua, he said, Joshua 1:3, verse 3 of chapter 1 is probably the key to the entire book. What does it say there? Every place on which the sole of your foot treads, I have given it to you. Just as I spoke to Moses. Underscore that, because I do believe he is correct in that, that is probably the key to the entire book of Joshua. The key thought in the book is not man's. It's God's faithfulness. Brother Smith further observes, the book of Joshua illustrates two great principles of Scripture. And the first is this, it's found in Exodus in chapter 15, verse 3, with the song of Moses, and that the children of Israel sang whenever they were delivered from the Egyptians at the Red Sea. And that is that Yahweh, it says, what they say in Hebrew is that Yahweh is a man of war. Okay? So Yahweh is a God of war. That's the first great principle. That Yahweh ordered Israel into battle against the Canaanites. But more so than that, and think of that, of this as far as today goes, and putting this in perspective. The God of holiness, Yahweh, the God of holiness is in perpetual conflict with the forces of evil. That's what the book of Joshua is going to show. And that is a great principle of Scripture. Is that Yahweh is a God of holiness. And that He is in perpetual conflict with the forces of evil. And I want you to think about this for a minute. Is that still true today? I think so. God is still a God of holiness. And He's still in conflict with the forces of evil. Evil has not been eradicated yet, has it not? We see evil in our world, do we not? God is in conflict with that. He didn't bring it about. He isn't the cause of it. But He is in conflict with it. And the second grand principle is this, which is illustrated in the book of Joshua, and one of the reasons why I chose to go through, preach through the book of Joshua as well. It's found in what we read, and what we went through, in the first epistle of John. In 1 John, chapter 5, verse 4. Find it here. For whatever is born of God overcomes the world. And this is the victory that has overcome the world. Our faith. You know, as I said before, and I firmly believe that we need to keep this uppermost in our minds, As Christians, we have overcome the world. But where we get the victory in that is our faith. We as Christians, we have nothing to be afraid of in this world. We have nothing to be afraid of as far as this virus is concerned. We should not be. We have nothing to be afraid of as far as the other things that are going on in this world and the forces. Why? Because we have got victory. We have victory. It's our faith. And thus we can learn from the book of Joshua this. Now in the first verses of the book of Joshua, we see how Yahweh has him succeed Moses. That's the message this morning is dealing with succeeding Moses. And since this is the most significant event after the death of Moses, I want to spend just a little bit of time this morning on Joshua himself before we delve into the contents of the book of Joshua. Because you see, God was preparing all this time. God was preparing Joshua. God's preparing us too. We are in the process of transformation. We haven't arrived yet, but we're in that preparation stage. Well, just like that, God also prepared Joshua to succeed Moses. Before we get into that specifically, I'll do a little history now on Joshua. Give you some background matters. We read the first four verses of chapter 1 of Joshua. Now it came about after the death of Moses, the servant of the Lord, that the Lord spoke to Joshua, the son of Nun, Moses' servant, saying, Moses, my servant, is dead. Now therefore arise, cross this Jordan, you and all this people, to the land which I am giving to them, to the sons of Israel. Every place on which the sole of your foot treads, I have given it to you, just as I spoke to Moses from the wilderness and this Lebanon, even as far as the great river, the river Euphrates, and all the land of the Hittites, and as far as the great sea, toward the setting of the sun, will be your territory. Now that's a vast amount of territory when you look at it. So, God has given this commission, if you want to look at it that way, to Joshua. This command to Joshua. Well, who was Joshua? How old was he when God told him that? Was he a youth? Was he a youngster? By the time they get to the edge of the Jordan, it's 14-07 B.C. But we also know that from the scriptures that they spent how many years in the wilderness?
40.
What's that?
40.
They spent 40 years, right? So that would take it up to 1447 B.C. Now, give you a little history of this. When the children of Israel, and Moses and children of Israel, when they were delivered by Yahweh from Egypt, By the time they reached Sinai, okay, Mount Sinai, where Moses was given the law for the children of Israel. By the time they reached that, from the time they were delivered to Sinai, how long did it take him to get there? Now, it could have been just a matter of days if God had taken the roundabout way. But he took him out the roundabout way for a reason. Now, remember there's over 3 million people here that are coming from Egypt. And they go to Sinai. Well, from what we can tell, is that it took about 3 months from the time they went from the Red Sea to Sinai. That's not very long, is it? But then God...
3 million people to travel with all their stuff.
What's that? What, Jen?
One guy in a backpack might not take so long. 3 million people.
And all 3 million people, and they're walking. Yeah, they're all walking.
All the cattle and animals.
But so they get to Sinai in 3 months. But when they get to Sinai, God has them stop. And they camp. For how long? A little over a year. So we'll say 1 year, 3 months. And that's added to now, so that makes up that with that 4 years in the wilderness. So, who was Joshua? And what's he got to do with that and with Moses? His original name was Hosea. His name was changed. This was his original name. Hosea. Meaning, which means salvation. Hosea. That was his original name. Who changed his name to Joshua? Moses did. Moses changed it to Joshua. Now, what Moses said, Joshua's name was this. And remember, in Hebrew, there's no J. We pronounce it Joshua. Because we pronounce a J. In Hebrew, they don't pronounce a J as a J. It's Yah. Okay. So in Hebrew, Moses changed his name to this. Yahshua. And what does that mean? It means, and this is significant, people, brothers and sisters, why it was changed. Moses changed his name. First, his name was Hosea, meaning salvation. Moses changed his name to Yahshua, which means Yahweh is salvation. Or Yahweh, salvation. The short form of his name, of Joshua's name, is this. Yeshua. Where have we seen that before?
Jesus.
When that's translated in the Septuagint in Greek, it's translated as
Jesus.
Jesus. Yeshua. That's Jesus. So Joshua changed the short form of his name Now what we know is that Joshua came from the tribe of Ephraim. He didn't even come from Moses' tribe. He wasn't from the tribe of Levi. He wasn't from the tribe of Judah. He was from the tribe of Ephraim. Now the first place that we note that we find Joshua is in Exodus chapter 17. Where Moses changed his name to Yahshua, and he made him, Moses made Joshua his aide, his assistant. But more so than that, Moses also made him the general of his forces, of the army. Okay? So in Exodus chapter 17, it's the first time we hear about Joshua. It's found in when the Amalek and the Amalekites came against the children of Israel. Verse 9, chapter 17. So Moses said to Joshua, "Choose men for us and go out. Fight against Amalek. Tomorrow I will station myself on the top of the hill with the staff of God, with the staff of Yahweh in my hand." Joshua did as Moses told him and fought against Amalek. He was the leader. Moses told his assistant, Joshua, you lead the warriors. You lead them and fight against Amalek. And Joshua did as Moses told him. And Moses and Aaron and Ur went up to the top of the hill. And so we know what happens here is that when Moses held his hand up, Israel prevailed. When he left his hand down, Amalek prevailed. But Moses' hands were heavy. Then they took a stone and they put it under him, and he sat on it, and Aaron and Ur supported his hands on one side and one on the other. Thus his hands were steady until the sunset. So, verse 13. So Joshua overwhelmed Amalek and his people with the edge of the sword. Then the Lord said to Moses, "Write this in a book as a memorial and recite it to Joshua, that I will utterly blot out the memory of Amalek from under heaven." Moses built an altar and named it, "The Lord is my banner." And he said, "The Lord is sworn, the Lord sworn, the Lord will have war against Amalek from generation to generation." But here's the significant thing. Moses told Joshua to lead the forces to fight against Amalek. But was Joshua fighting in his own power? No. Moses said, "I'm going to go up on a hill, I have the rod in my hand." It was Yahweh. It was God. Joshua led the forces, but he didn't fight in his own power. It was the power of God. How do we know that? Because when Moses held up his hands, they prevailed, didn't they? But when they came down, they didn't. It was in Yahweh's power. And then God has, and this is so significant, brothers and sisters, God has Moses record in a book. And he says, See, all this time, God, Yahweh, God is preparing Joshua for what is to come. Because what he says here, recite it to Joshua. Write it in a book and recite it to Joshua. Now, what book do you suppose that was? Why, it's the Pentateuch. It's what we have recorded here in Exodus. That's what he's talking about. And then, the next place we find Joshua, you turn over to Exodus chapter 24. They are at Mount Sinai. And they stay there, as I say, they stay there for a year. In Exodus chapter 24, verses 9 through 11, says this. Moses took half of the blood and put in basins, and the other half of the blood he sprinkled on the altar. Then he took the book of the covenant and read in the hearing of the people. Well, what's the book of the covenant? It's what he's writing. The book of the covenant. Genesis. And what he's writing now. And they said, all that the Lord has spoken, we will do. Notice this. And we will be obedient. So then what happens here? Right after that. Then Moses went up with Aaron, Nadab, and Abihu, and 70 of the elders of Israel. And they saw the God of Israel, Yahweh. And under his feet there appeared to be a pavement of sapphire clear as the sky itself. Yet he did not stretch out his hand against the nobles of the sons of Israel. And they saw God, and they ate and drank. And the Lord said to Moses, come to me on the mountain, on Sinai, and remain there, and I will give you the stone tablets with the law and the commandment which I have written, God wrote, which I have written for their instruction. So Moses arose with Joshua, his servant, his aide. And Moses went up to the mountain of God. So Moses and Joshua goes up. And they lead the people, right? Down there. And what you see here, as you read through this, that Moses went and Joshua went up to the mountain, and the cloud covered the mountain, and the glory of the Lord rested on the mountain. On Mount Sinai, and the cloud covered it for 6 days. And on the seventh day, he called to Moses from the midst of the cloud. And to the eyes of the sons of Israel, the appearance of the glory of the Lord, the character of the Lord, was like a consuming fire on the mountaintop. And Moses entered the midst of the cloud as he went up to the mountain. And Moses was on the mountain 40 days and 40 nights, right? And Joshua was with him during this time. What we learn from this is what Francis Schaeffer says. Above everything and overshadowing everything is the reality of God in His glory. So Moses and Joshua are there, and God is giving Moses the law. Specifically, what is known in Hebrew as the 10 words, what we call the 10 commandments. And there he's up there 40 days and 40 nights. So then what happens? Well, you turn to the next place we find Joshua is in Exodus chapter 32. Moses and Joshua are still up on the mountain. Moses has received the Ten Commandments.
He's received instructions from God. And in verse, beginning of the verse, it says, "Now when the people saw that Moses delayed to come down from the mountain, the people assembled about Aaron and said to him, 'Come, make us a God who will go before us. As for this Moses, the man who brought us up from the land of Egypt, we don't know what has become of him.'" Notice that Aaron doesn't even question him. Aaron said, "Just take off all your gold. Take off your necklaces, your gold rings, and that, and bring them to me." And the people do it. And he fashions for himself a God, doesn't he? With a graving tool, and made it into a molten calf. And they said, "This is your God, O Israel, who brought you up from the land of Egypt." And when Aaron saw, he built an altar before it, and Aaron made a proclamation and said, "Tomorrow, a feast to the Lord, a feast to that calf." That's the next place we find Joshua, is the matter of the golden calf. And literally in the Hebrew, what verse 6 says, they rose early in the morning, and they offered burnt offerings, brought peace offerings, and the people sat down to eat and to drink, and they rose up to play. In Hebrew, what that means, they rose up to play, it meant they were having an orgy. That's what that means in Hebrew. They were being debauched themselves. Then the Lord spoke to Moses and said, "Go down at once." Now notice what God said. Notice what Yahweh said. "For your people." Notice this time he doesn't say my people. He says, "For your people, whom you brought up from the land of Egypt, have corrupted. And they have quickly turned aside from the way which I commanded them. They have made for themselves a molten calf and have worshipped it and have sacrificed to it and said, 'This is your God, O Israel, who brought you up from the land of Egypt.' And the Lord said to Moses, 'I have seen this people, and behold, they are an obstinate people. Now then, let me alone, that my anger may burn against them, and I may destroy them, and I'll make of you a great nation.'" And of course, we know that Moses entreated God not to do that.
Wasn't the only time that he had done that, too.
No, exactly.
And why he said, your people.
But now notice.
Because he took account for them on multiple occasions.
Now notice what happens, though. So Moses, in verse 15, Moses turns and he goes down from the mountain with the two tablets of testimony in his hand. Tablets which were written on both sides. They were written on one and the other. And the tablets were God's work. And the writing was God's writing engraved on the tablets. Now notice what we learn here from this. It all has to do with Joshua's preparation. Now when Joshua heard the sound of the people as they shouted, he said to Moses, you see what Joshua has? Joshua has a warrior's mindset. Because the first thing that Joshua says is, there's a sound of war in the camp. But Moses says, he said, it is not the sound of the cry of triumph, nor is it the sound of the cry of defeat, but the sound of singing I hear. So see, what Joshua learned here, though, as you read on this, Joshua was being prepared. Joshua learned a lesson here. He had not seen this before. He had been to war. He had a warrior's mindset. He thought it was war. Moses tells him, no, it's not that. And it came about as soon as Moses came near the camp that he saw the calf and dancing. And Moses' anger burned. In Hebrew, actually, it didn't talk about all their orgies. And he threw the tablets from his hand and shattered them at the foot of the mountain. And he took the calf which they had made and burned with fire and ground it to powder and scattered it over the surface of the water. And he made the sons of Israel drink. Then Moses said to Aaron, what did this people do to you that you have brought such great sin upon them? So Aaron tells him, of course, and Aaron, of course, is lying. But what does Joshua learn from this? Joshua learns a lesson about sin and disobedience in this instance. You see, you just using God's name is not enough. Jewish tradition says that when Aaron made that golden calf, he engraved on that golden calf the name of Yahweh, the Tetragrammaton. He engraved it on that. And he was telling the people, saying, this is him, this is Yahweh, this calf. But what Joshua learns from this is, and what we can learn from it as well, just saying God's name isn't enough.
Just like what Jeroboam did.
Exactly. And what Joshua learns here is that there is such a thing as righteous anger. Do you think God was not angry at this? His people, he wanted to wipe them out. But Moses entreated for him. And Joshua learns about sin and disobedience here. And then the next place we see Joshua is in the tabernacle. What did he learn here? In Exodus chapter 3, 33 verses 9 through 11. It says, whenever Moses entered the tent, the pillar of cloud would descend and stand at the entrance of the tent, and the Lord would speak with Moses. When all the people saw the pillar of cloud standing at the entrance of the tent, all the people would arise and worship, each at the entrance of his tent. Verse 11. Thus the Lord used to speak to Moses face to face, just as a man speaks to his friend. When Moses returned to the camp, his servant, his aide, his assistant, Joshua, the son of Nun, a young man, would not depart from the tent. Joshua was learning about God's leading, about Yahweh's leading, about His guidance. And this is important because Joshua had to learn that Yahweh comes first. Not man, not the people, but Yahweh. The next instance is found in the book of Numbers. In the book of Numbers, chapter 11, verses 24 through 29, it says, so Moses went out and told the people the words of the Lord. And he gathered 70 men of the elders of the people and stationed them around the tent. Then the Lord came down in the cloud and spoke to him, Moses. And he took of the Spirit who was upon him. That's Yahweh did that. And placed upon the 70 elders. And when the Spirit rested upon them, they prophesied, but they did not do it again. But two men who had remained in the camp, the name of one was Eldad, the name of the other Medad, and the Spirit rested upon them too. But they weren't part of the 70. Now they were among those who had been registered, but they had not gone out to the tent, and they prophesied in the camp. So a young man runs and tells Moses, and said, Eldad and Medad are prophesying in camp too, but they're not part of the 70. Now look at verse 28. Then Joshua the son of Nun, the attendant of Moses from his youth, means he's not a youth now, said, Moses, my Lord, restrain them. They're not part of the 70. But Moses said to him, "Are you jealous for my sake? Would that all the Lord's people were prophets, that the Lord would put His Spirit upon them." Then Moses returned to the camp, he and the elders of Israel. So what did Joshua learn from that? And that's a lesson as far as today, as leadership is concerned, is that God was the one who did that. Yahweh was the one that did that. He must come first, not man. See, at that time, Joshua was saying about Moses and what had happened. Because that's what Joshua said. Are you envious for me? And Moses is trying to get Joshua's mind on Yahweh, on God. That Yahweh must come first, not man. That is a lesson for us today too, as far as leadership is concerned, in the church and in our lives. Of what is happening, what's going on now? That's a lesson for us. He must come first, even in all this. And then we learned in Numbers 13 that 12 are sent to spy out the land. Isn't that interesting? That as Moses is the leader of the army, Joshua, and Moses' main assistant, that he would send Joshua out as well as one of the spies? Well, why not leave him in the camp? But no, he's one of the ones sent out. And now we know what happens when they return, right? As recorded in Numbers 14. 12 were sent out, right? 10 of them said, "No, we can't do it." Who were the two that said we can? Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, tribe of Judah, and Joshua, the son of Nun, of the tribe of Ephraim. Now, how old were Caleb and Joshua at that time? Well, if you read later on in the book of Joshua, you'll see that at the time that they were sent out into the land, Joshua and Caleb were probably the same age, which is 40. So they weren't young guys. They were 40 years old when they were sent out to spy out the land. Caleb and Joshua were willing to stand up for God no matter what. And we're going to see how significant this is as we go back through the book of Joshua. Because we see God's punishment. What did the people want to do to Caleb and Joshua? If you read Numbers 14. They wanted to stone them. They wanted to kill them. You know, Caleb and Joshua could have said, "All right, okay, all right, it's all right. You know, we'll go along with the 10. You know, because we value our lives." But Caleb and Joshua stood up to the people. But they listened to the 10. And God's punishment for that would be 38 more years in the wilderness outside the promised land. Everybody over the age of 20 and up would die, except for Caleb and Joshua. Now, what did Joshua learn from that? That Yahweh keeps His promises. In Numbers chapter 26, verse 65, we're almost down here. In Numbers chapter 26, verse 65, we see Joshua set apart by Moses to be his successor. They spent 40 years in the wilderness.
Joshua was 40 years old when they went to spy out the land, which makes him, at the time that he is to succeed Moses, Joshua by that time, you get this? 78 years old. He's not a young guy. He's 78. Most of us, most people at 78, what do they want to do? We're done.
Yeah.
I'm done with my job. I'm done with my. I'm done. You know, I'm done. I just want to sit back and I want to take it easy. But Joshua's 78.
Relative Moses was what, like 107, 100, twice his age.
When Moses dies, Jeff, when Moses dies, he is 120 years old. He's 120. When Joshua dies, he's 110. So that tells you, see, when they get to the promised land and they can enter the promised land, all those from 20 and above, 40 years, they have died. He's now 78. Moses hasn't died yet. In Numbers chapter 26, verse 65, we read this. For the Lord has said of them, they shall surely die in the wilderness, and not a man was left of them, except Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, and Joshua, the son of Nun. And Yahweh tells Moses that Joshua is the one that would take his place, that would succeed him. Numbers 27, chapter 27, verses 18 through 23. So the Lord said to Moses, take Joshua, the son of Nun, he's 78 years old. Take Joshua, the son of Nun, a man in whom is the Spirit, and lay your hand on him. And have him stand before Eleazar the priest, Aaron's son, and before all the congregation, and commission him in their sight. You shall put some of your authority on him, in order that all the congregation of the sons of Israel may obey. Moreover, he shall stand before Eleazar the priest, who shall inquire for him by the judgment of the Urim before the Lord. At his command they shall go out, and at his command they shall come in. He and the sons of Israel with him, even all the congregation. Moses did just as the Lord commanded him, and he took Joshua and set him before Eleazar the priest and before all the congregation. And he laid his hands on him. Moses did. Yahweh had him do that. And commissioned him, just as the Lord had spoken through Moses. What's that teach us? It's not man's doing. It wasn't Joshua's doing. It wasn't even Moses' doing. It's all Yahweh's doing. It should teach us that true leadership comes from Him. Comes from Yahweh. And notice that God said, I want you to do this in full view of all the people so that they know who is to lead them. And then in Deuteronomy chapter 31, you see Moses' final words to the people. And he said to them, I am 120 years old today. I'm no longer able to come and go. And the Lord has said to me, you shall not cross this Jordan. It is the Lord your God. Underscore this. It is the Lord your God who will cross ahead of you. He will destroy these nations before you. And you shall dispossess them. Joshua is the one who will cross ahead of you, just as the Lord has spoken. The Lord will do to them just as He did to Sion and Og, the kings of the Amorites, and to their land when He destroyed them.
The Lord will deliver them up before you, and you shall do to them according to all the commandments which I have commanded you. Be strong and courageous. Do not be afraid or tremble at them, for the Lord your God is the one who goes with you. He will not fail you or forsake you. And then Moses called to Joshua and said to him in the sight of all Israel, be strong and courageous, for you shall go with this people into the land which the Lord has sworn to their fathers to give them, and you shall give it to them as an inheritance. The Lord is the one who goes ahead of you. He will be with you. He will not fail you or forsake you. Do not fear or be dismayed, he says. And that includes Joshua. Brothers and sisters, we need to remember that today as well. Who goes before us as the church? Why, God does. His Son does. So then the Lord said in verse 14, 15, then the Lord said to Moses, behold, the time for you to die is near. Call Joshua and present yourselves at the tent of meeting that I may commission him. So Moses and Joshua went and presented themselves at the tent of meeting. And the Lord appeared in the tent in the pillar of cloud, and the pillar of cloud showed the doorway of the tent. And we know that Moses dies, and God buries him. Now there's a lesson here about scripture as well that's found in Deuteronomy verses 9 through 12 and 24 through 26. It came about when Moses finished writing the words of this law in the book until they were complete. That's a reference to the Pentateuch that Moses commanded the Levites who carried the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord, saying, take this book of the law and place it beside the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord your God, that it may remain there as a witness against you. So then, in Deuteronomy chapter 34, verses 7 through 8, Joshua records the death of Moses, and they mourn for him 30 days. And that brings us to this. They mourn for him 30 days, and now, Joshua is 78 years old, and now Joshua is ready for the next phase in Yahweh's plan and in his life. But what must be crystal clear throughout all of this, brothers and sisters, is this, and it's found in the book of Joshua, Joshua chapter 24, verse 15. Actually,
no, you're right.
Verse 14 and 15. It says, Joshua says, and we must be crystal clear about this, Joshua had a choice throughout his life. From the time that he was Moses' assistant, Joshua could have told Moses, you want me to lead him? Not in your life. I value my life. You want me to go out and spy out that land? No, I'm not going to do it. But he didn't do that. He did. He obeyed. And so at the end of his life, what does Joshua say? Now therefore fear the Lord and serve him in sincerity and truth and put away the gods which your fathers served beyond the river and in Egypt and serve the Lord. Do you notice what Joshua is saying there? Joshua is saying he knows that there are people who are serving other gods and other idols. And then he says in verse 15, if it is disagreeable in your sight to serve the Lord, choose for yourselves today whom you will serve, whether the gods which your fathers served, which were beyond the river, or the gods of the Amorite in whose land you are living. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord." Joshua had a choice, you see, throughout his life. And this is important to see at the beginning as we start to go through the book of Joshua. Joshua had to be prepared for what he was going to go through. He had to lead over 3 million. Yeah, he had to lead over 3 million people. Imagine what they put upon him. But what Joshua learned and what he saw was, who's the one that's really leading? God is. And that's a lesson for us in this today. See, who's really leading our lives? Who's really leading the church? Is it us? Or should it be Him? It should be Him. Same way with the lives. That's why I tell people, whatever this virus, whatever is happening in our country and world, we don't have anything to be afraid about. Because we have Him. See? And Joshua, 78 years old, here he is going to conquer the promised land. He didn't have anything to be concerned about either. That's why Moses and God told him, be strong and courageous. Do not fear. Do not be dismayed. Because I go in front of you. God, Yahweh is saying, I'm leading. Same thing today. God is saying, put your life in my hands. I'll lead. You let me lead. Obey me. Let me lead. See? Let's think of that. There's some good things to think about, I think, as we get into our study in Joshua. It's about a word of prayer. Stand. We're about a word of prayer. Father God, we thank you for this day that you've given us. Lord, what an example your servant Joshua is, and the things that we can learn from that, and the things that we will learn from that as we go through this marvelous book. And we see how you lead, how you guide, how you direct, and how there are those who indeed who obey, and yet those also who disobey. And the lessons that we can learn from that for today. Be with us now, Lord, as we go to our homes. Guide and direct us in all things. We praise you and thank you for the many blessings that we have, especially for that greatest blessing that we have in your Son, Jesus, in whose name we ask all these things. Amen.